Besicha for Parshas Vayishlach is in Chelek Gimel, Volume 3 of Likutei Sichos, and it's actually a Sicha for Yutes Kislev. Yutes Kislev is related to Parshas Vayishlach in that the Magid, the Shabbos before he passed away, and he passed away on Yutes Kislev, the Shabbos before he passed away, while lying in bed, he said, Vayishlach Yankiv Malochim El Esav, that Yaakov sent the mamash, the body of the malach, to Esav, but not the essence. The essence of the malach remained by Yaakov. Now Rashi says that Yaakov sent angels, mamash, meaning he sent, literally sent the angel. So the way Rashi understands it and the way the Magid explained it seemed to be contradictory. Rashi is saying, Malochim Mamush, the word Mamush implies that it was really the angel. And the Magid is saying that the word Mamush implies that he didn't send the real angel, he sent only the Mamush, the palpable part, the physical part, the body of the angel. But the essence of the angel stayed with Yaakov. So the Rebbe explains that this contradiction is only on the surface. When you stop and think about it, an angel belongs in essence by Yaakov, not by Esav. So the fact that when the angel went as a shliach on a shlichus from Yaakov to Esav, the essence of the angel, the shliach, remained with the mishaleach. It remained connected and devoted to Yaakov and not to Esav. So that by the very fact that the body of the malach related to the shlichus and the effect that it needed to have on Esav, but the soul of the angel, the mind and heart and the devotion of the angel remained with Yaakov, that's why it was mamash an angel that went to Esav. Because that's what an angel really is all about, that the heart and soul belongs to Yaakov and only the body deals with Esav. So in this connection between Vayishlach and Yutes Kislev, there is a sicha in the third volume of Likutei Sichos. This sicha was actually said in 1923. And the Rebbe says as follows, that the Friedrich Rebbe, who brought, transplanted Chassidus Lubavitch to America, told many stories about the Alter Rebbe, and one of them, which is very relevant to our times, needs to be mentioned. And this is the kind of a story that brings out and shows the essence and the character of the style or the philosophy of Lubavitch Chassidus of Chabad. This was in the time when the Mittel Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe's son, who later became his successor, was living in the same house with his father. The Mittel Rebbe already had children at the time, and among the children there was a baby, an infant. The Alter Rebbe lived on the second floor, on the upstairs, and the Mittel Rebbe lived on the ground floor. One time when the Mittel Rebbe was sitting and learning, and the baby, the infant, was sleeping nearby in a crib, the crib turned over. The Mittel Rebbe was so deeply immersed in his studies that he didn't hear the crib fall and he didn't hear the baby crying. The Alter Rebbe, although he was upstairs on the second floor and he too was immersed in learning, yet he heard the baby cry. So he interrupted his learning, he came downstairs, he picked up the baby, quieted the baby, and put him back into the crib. Afterwards, the Alter Rebbe said to his son, to the Mittel Rebbe, that when a child is crying and you're immersed in the learning to such a degree that you don't hear the cry, this is not an acceptable way. This is not an acceptable behavior. The Friedrich Rebbe explained the story, elaborated on the story, and he said that as deep and as devoted as we are in the world of Torah and Mitzvahs, when a child is crying and needs attention, we have to tear ourselves away from the study and from the mitzvah that we're doing for ourselves and attend to the needs of the child. Because when a Jewish child expresses a need and is feeling an emptiness and wants and needs to be taught and to be elevated in his Yiddishkeit, we have to put everything else aside and take care of the child. This is particularly relevant to us in our times, the Rebbe says, because we live now in a time where we can see a very strong desire, an awakening among Jews in general, and young Jews in particular, that even among teenagers and younger, 13-year-old, and even younger than that, we see a desire and a yearning to learn and to grow in Yiddishkeit. We find also in young marrieds who have young children, even 4 and 5-year-olds, the parents also have developed a strong desire and a thirst for Yiddishkeit. We feel also that the desire is not for some kind of entertainment Yiddishkeit, but a desire for Yiddishkeit in its truest, original, authentic form, without compromises and without sugarcoating. And only when we give our children that kind of education, that kind of upbringing, which is based completely and totally on the truth of Torah, only then is their desire and their need satisfied. And this is what we learned from the story mentioned before, that whatever a Jew may be involved in, and certainly all Jews are involved in good things and in important things, in pursuing a livelihood or in a community project and so on, but when it comes to the need of a Jewish child, that must be given priority treatment, and it must come first before all other projects. We have to make the greatest effort and put in the greatest amount of work to make sure that every Jewish child receives a Jewish education, a Torah education, particularly in the condition in which the world is today, that many children are left out of the yeshivas and of Jewish educations because of financial problems or other such things. So we have to make sure that every child's desire for Yiddishkeit is satisfied. Unfortunately, there are also those kinds of children who are lacking in Yiddishkeit and lacking in Torah knowledge, but they're not crying. We don't see in them, we don't hear from them a thirst and a yearning for Jewish values, for Jewish awareness. And that gives us an even greater obligation, because the very fact that they're not crying shows that their lack is so deep, that their hunger is so deep that they no longer feel it as hunger. A person doesn't know that he's sick, that's an even greater sickness, a worse sickness than when a person feels symptoms. And this is one of the things that a yeshiva should, all yeshivas, should devote themselves to make sure that they accept and bring in every kind of Jewish child without any restriction whatsoever, without any discrimination whatsoever, regardless of what family background the child comes from, regardless of what attitudes the child displays at the moment. Every Jewish child should be absorbed and surrounded in an environment of Torah and mitzvahs so that they will be blessed in their physical life as well as in their spiritual life. One other point that needs to be made concerning the world in general. As we are now entering a new year like a new child, the world finds itself in general in the position of a baby who has fallen out of its crib, because the world has in general left its track, fallen out of its cradle, so to speak, and is totally confused in terms of its direction and of its future. So it is searching desperately to find ways to harness the human potential in a way that it will contribute to the building and to the improvement of life in the world, rather than the opposite, rather than to the destruction and the deterioration of life. And here also a person might say that he's got his own problems. He is busy with his own affairs, and he has no time to devote himself to the direction of the world in general, or society in general, and to worry about what's going on in the world, particularly in another country. But we now know that in spite of the distance between one country and another, or one neighborhood and another, we now know that what happens in one corner of the world actually affects the rest of the world as well. Then there's another claim that a person might have, and that is, mi ani umo ani. If there are problems in the world, who am I and what am I that I should be able to make a change, to make a difference in the world? But the truth is that every person can have an effect on the entire world. As the Rambam says, that the world is balanced and one more deed can change the world. But we find also in other svarim that whenever a Jew does a mitzvah in one place, one little corner of the world, and he creates there a divine light, the light of truth, the emes of Torah, that light, the Torah and the mitzvah, has the ability to affect the entire world, and God promises that it will affect the entire world, in that it will become better and easier everywhere in the world to be good. So when a person in his own limited space creates that kind of a light, the result is that everywhere in the world people are moved and are inspired to pursue righteousness and justice, goodness and holiness, that dispels and removes all the forces of evil and of war, etc., the destructive forces, and replaces it with the force of good and of light. Among the activities that a person can do in his little corner of the world that affect the rest of the world is, as mentioned before, in strengthening the true Jewish education of Jewish children wherever they are. And by having an individual Jewish child educated and inspired by the light and the godliness of Torah, this causes the godliness and the light of Torah and mitzvahs to spread throughout the whole world. Ne'er mitzvah of Torah eiv, it lights up the whole world. And then we have God's guarantee, God's promise, that this will bring great blessing to all those who are involved and participate in this activity, in that all the good in the world will become stronger until finally, eventually, the powers of good will be victorious and will conquer the evil, and we will be zeicha among all Jews and the whole world with the coming of Mashiach to take the entire world out of Golos and to bring the true Geula that is lasting and permanent. And the Rebbe ends with a bracha that God should bless us all with true health, with happiness, and with enthusiasm, which will help us in all of our activities, so that we will do it to the greatest success. Because as we see, that the situation, the circumstances in which we are now, is as much as we strengthen the yeshivas, the bigger the yeshiva becomes, the more students we will find, and all the facilities will be filled and overfilled, and all the classes will be filled. And this will happen when we work with enthusiasm and with simcha and with good health, and this will also increase God's bracha in the hatzlacha of our activities. Now we might add that if this was true in 1923, that the Rebbe already then saw that there was an opening, an awareness, a thirsting, a desire among young people even among children, for not only some parts of Torah, not only some parts of Yiddishkeit, but for the true, complete, essential, authentic Yiddishkeit without any compromises, how much more so today, all these years later, when the world has so obviously become conscious and concerned with values and with ethics and with truth, that now certainly the time has come when we have to speak out and offer the message of Torah to the whole world, beginning, of course, with Jewish children, whom we don't have to convince and we don't have to argue with them. In fact, they're knocking on the door and asking that we teach them true Yiddishkeit and give them a way to live on a daily basis, from morning to night and throughout the entire year, that they should know and feel that they are going on the path of Yiddishkeit, and they are doing what they were created to do, and that this goodness that is now coming from them, this desire and this openness and this willingness, not only from Jewish children but from non-Jews as well, from the entire world, that goodness contains in it a potential for godliness that has never existed before. In addition to the fact that every year since creation, every year there has been a greater godliness in the world, a greater Gilui in the world, but particularly now, the generation of Geula, the time is now right, and we're seeing it with our own eyes, that goodness is coming from the earth, not from heaven, from the Mekabel, not from the Mashpia, and that goodness is a higher and greater good than anything we've ever experienced in the past. And as we learn in the Parsha of Noach, that Avraham came and gathered the reward and the schus of all previous generations from Noach till Avraham. And what the Rebbe says there is that there are many qualities, many forms of godliness that were produced in the world but never revealed to the world as the goodness of the generation between generations between Noach and Avraham. They produced goodness, but it wasn't revealed to them, and they didn't benefit from it. But when Avraham came along and served people and brought them to godliness, elevated them to the level, to an awareness of godliness, he reaped the benefits, the schus of all previous generations. And so it is with our generation, that we reap the benefits of all previous generations from the time of creation, that all the schusim that were created by Jews and lahavdil by non-Jews, in their goodness that was not revealed and not appreciated, we now can benefit from all of that if we tap into it by adding the little bit of goodness and a little bit of effort that we have to do to bring the world to an awareness of Emes Hashem L'Olam, that we then not only get rewarded for our own efforts, but also for all the efforts of previous generations that remained hidden and were collecting and gathering and waiting to be revealed. And these schusim, what do we mean by a schus? If a person does a mitzvah, what schus does he accumulate? He accumulates the schus that his children, that future generations, will find it easier to keep Torah and mitzvahs and to serve God with a whole heart and a whole mind and a true devotion, easier than it was for the grandparent. That is the ultimate schus. So with all the parents, ancestors of the past who have accumulated schusim, it should now become easy for us and natural for us to be able to serve God with a whole heart and a whole mind without any interference, without any resistance at all, not from the outside world and not from our own Yetzirah, but that we should have a zchus in Torah and mitzvahs, that we should be able to serve God effortlessly, painlessly, and therefore with great joy, by reaping all the godliness that was planted in the earth, in the lowly world, in the outside world, that is now offering itself back to holiness and coming and knocking on our doors and saying, I have good intentions, I have good feelings, show me how to use them, show me how to serve God and express this desire to be connected to the Emes. In volume 15, Chelek Tezvov, of the Kutei Sichos, there is a third sicha on Parshas Vayishlach, also connected with Yud-Tes Kislev. Here the Rebbe says on the pasuk, Vayevose Yankev Levadei. Yankev remained alone, and then he crossed over the water, the river, and he wrestled with the angel. So the Gemara says, what does it mean that he remained alone? And the Gemara gives the answer that he was separated and was remained alone by crossing over the river because he went back to get some leftover utensils, little pots and pans. The Medrash gives another explanation. The Medrash says, "Ma Hakadosh Baruch Hu Kosov Bei V'Nizgav Hashem Levadei." Just as by the Eibishter it says that God remains alone, stands alone. Ach Yaakov, the same is true by Yaakov. Vayevasa Yaakov Levadei. That Yaakov also stands alone. And as we've spoken many times, when there are two explanations for the same thing, there must be a connection between them. And here we find two extremely contradictory explanations. According to the Gemara, the reason Yaakov was alone was over small, insignificant things. Little pots and pans that were left over. And on the other hand, the Medrash says that this aloneness is of the highest sort, comparable to the aloneness of God, particularly the aloneness and the gilui of the oneness of God, as it will be la'asid lavi in the world to come, because the end of the pasuk is nizgav Hashem levadei bayim hahu, on that day, after the coming of Mashiach, then this aloneness of God, the oneness of God, will be revealed. So here we're comparing Yaakov's oneness to the oneness of God. This is connected also to Yud-Tes Kislev, because concerning Yud-Tes Kislev we find also two extremely contradictory explanations. In answer to the question of why Hasidus was revealed at such a late stage in history, only in the last couple of generations, we find two answers. On the one hand, we are told that Hasidus came in our times, late in history, because of the extreme darkness of Ikrus de Mashiach, of the generations before Mashiach, which began with the Baal Shem Tov. Because of this double and quadruple darkness, there was a need to illuminate the world with the light of Hasidus. And the other explanation, again, the extreme opposite, is what is written in Kisvei HaAzizal, and the Alter Rebbe mentions it in Shulchan Aruch, that Erev Shabbos, you're supposed to taste from the food that were prepared for Shabbos. Te'ameha chayim zachu. So you're supposed to taste the foods of Shabbos and Erev Shabbos. And so it is also in terms of history that the days, each 1,000 years represents a day that in the last generation before Mashiach, in the Erev Shabbos, in the 6,000th year, beginning from the year 5,500, or 5,001, you're supposed to already start to taste, since it is now Friday, you're supposed to start to taste the foods of Shabbos, the foods of Mashiach. And so Hasidus is the taste of the teachings of Mashiach while it's still Friday, Erev Shabbos. So here also the explanations are extremely contradictory. The first explanation is that Hasidus was revealed in the later generations because of how lowly, how dark those generations are, those times are. And the second explanation says that we are given a taste of Mashiach even before Mashiach comes because of the greatness of it. So the explanation of this contradiction is that Yud-Tes Kislev was the beginning of the time of Yafutzu Menesecha Chutzu. When the Alter Rebbe came out of prison, that's when he was able to really start to spread the teachings of Hasidus even to the Chutzu. And the idea here being that the Ma'ayon, the well itself, should reach Chutzah. Because there are times when one can have an influence on the world around him, but the person himself remains aloof and separate from the world around him. Here the expression Yafutza Mainasecha Chutza, that the well itself reaches outside, not that the well has influence on the outside, while the well itself remains inside, but that the well itself spreads to the outside. And when we say Yafutzu Mainasecha Chutza, it means that when the well itself comes to the outside, it is absorbed into the outside. Like we learned in the Sikha of Bereshis, that the Torah begins with the story of creation and all the stories of the Chumash Bereshis, all to explain to the world, to the nations of the world, why Eretz Yisrael, or how Eretz Yisrael, belongs to the Jewish people. And the Rebbe says there, the explanation has to be not only an answer that we have to present to the non-Jew for our own satisfaction, but the answer has to be so convincing, and it has to be so thorough, that the non-Jew to whom we give this answer will agree, understand, and agree that this is correct, and be moved by it to change his behavior. So the reaching out of the Mayonis to the Chutzah is not that it should have an influence from a distance, but that the well itself should come into the Chutzah, and when the well comes into the Chutzah, it should devote itself to the Chutzah to the degree, to the point where the Chutzah itself begins to understand and to think in a holy fashion. Now, this Yafutza Mainasecha Chutzah began the revelation of the essence of Torah, the Pnimiyus HaTorah of Chassidus, began when the hidden part of Torah was revealed in the revealed part of Torah, in the Nigla of the Torah. Because before Chassidus, there were many tzaddikim, many great scholars, sages, who were geniuses in both fields of Torah, in the revealed part of Torah and in the Pnimiyus HaTorah, in the soul of Torah, but those two subjects remained separate. They were two distinct subjects. And although one had an influence on the other, obviously, inevitably, but the influence was from a distance. They remained two separate subjects influencing each other. But with the beginnings of Chassidus, with Yutes Kislev, was the time where the Alter Rebbe was the first to bring together, to merge the two parts of Torah, bringing the soul of Torah into the body of Torah. As, for example, understanding a mitzvah with all of its details, the halacha of a mitzvah, according to the inner meaning, according to the neshama of Torah. Now, just as it is with Torah, that you join, you bring together the ma'ayon, the well, the essence of Torah, with its body, with the chutzah of Torah, the same is true also with the neshama. The neshama has an essence and a body, an external part. Prior to the Alter Rebbe, there was a division, there was a separation. There was the etzem of the neshama, the essence of the neshama, and that was, for example, faith and obedience, that was super rational, above the rational level. And then there was the rational function, the human function of the rest of the system of intelligence and emotions. The Alter Rebbe brought the two together so that even that which is above intelligence and above the rational, the faith, the emunah, and the obedience, the super rational obedience, that the mind should be able to appreciate and to approve of the emunah and of the acceptance of the obedience, so that that which was above intelligence should be felt in intelligence, and the intelligence itself should rationally approve and almost demand the qualities that are super rational, the faith and the obedience.